All right, I want to get back to the ZBT house. Mm-hmm. I want to hear more about...
Well, the ZBT house in my day... Now, my son was here. He graduated in 1970. The ZBT house had changed some of it. It was still a good fraternity house. My stepson came here, graduated in 84. And his mother was not Jewish, although she converted to Judaism. And we were married for quite a while. In fact, she's up here. You going to be in any of these activities tonight? Mm-hmm. Or she's with me. She'll be here. She and I were divorced. We got married in 1969. We were divorced in 1981 because she had too many children and I had too many children. There's always something going on. But when Henry was here, it was a pretty good house. In my day, it was a great house. We did a lot of good things. We had a lot of good people. We weren't much on sports. We didn't have too many athletes. This Jay Silverstein, whose name I saw just a few minutes ago in a Calix, was my roommate my senior year. He was a runner. He was on the track team. We didn't have Gene Friedberg, who was my roommate, was the manager of the basketball team for 2 years. We had people who were, I won't say intellectual, I don't know whether we had a couple that were intellectual. We had another brother named Ed Corey, who was class of, 43, I guess. He became ambassador to Ethiopia, and he was the UPI, United Press International, main correspondent for Europe and then for North Africa during World War II. We had a lot of people that were wound up in interesting things, and they were interesting people. They were smart, and they were fun.
Was it just clear cut that Jewish guys went into Jewish fraternities? Were there any Jewish students who went into any other fraternities?
No, nobody that declared themselves as actively Jewish were even rushed by the other fraternities. And of course, I can see how that was. Now, in 1970, when my son graduated, I think it was still like that. But when Les was here, it was not. I went to the national convention. I went to two ZBT national conventions, one in 1938-39 in San Francisco. Charlie Tallheim and his family took me with them and paid all the expenses for me. I could have gone otherwise. And the idea was his brother was getting married out there, and I was to go to the fraternity convention and look after all the... I was the house manager of the fraternity house for 2 years. I didn't tell you that. In addition to being... Well, the good thing about that is I got free room and board, see? So, again, being a poor boy, I didn't have to pay all those things. We went out to the convention, and then there was no question. There was nothing going on. But in 1946 or 7, my wife and I went to the convention in New York, and it was like 1,200 delegates there, and there were only six of us. One of them was me, that said we didn't feel that ZBT should declare itself non-sectarian. We felt that it should have maintained itself as a Jewish fraternity, and if they wanted to take other people, they should have, because this way they're not fish or fowl. There's still ZBT fraternity houses around. Some places they're all Jewish, other places they're not. And I don't know that's important, and I don't know that it's so different, but in the days of the 30s when I was here, it was very important to me because I didn't know, or I did because of our business and because of the little town I lived in, I didn't know much about what other types of people did because my home life was different. And we maintained that pretty well. We had a good house mother, Ms. Neely, when I was here. And we maintained a great deal of decorum. We weren't wild with our parties and things like that. We used to have a big party at semester break where we invited the whole campus. And we used to get 600 or 700 people come in. You know, we had what they call PJ now. We used to make purple passion, grain alcohol, grape juice, and some fruit. And it was delicious stuff. It tasted like good fruit juice till you had about three, and then you'd wind up stiff as a tabletop. I used to kid people. I'd say we'd have the whole campus in, and they'd the stuff was so good they'd drink, and then the next morning we'd find them out on the stretched out on the lawn. We could pick them up by their ankles. They were still stiff. And when Henry was here, ZBT was still a force, and they were still good academically. My son was Phi Beta Kappa, too. I'm very proud of him. He's a big-time surgeon in North Carolina. And he went to Washington Lee, and he worked in the kids had a summer job with one of the teachers in the chemistry department who wrote a book. Henry helped him with the book. Sophomore, junior year, and he got a lot out of Washington Lee. But unfortunately, 3 years ago, his daughter, my granddaughter, was rejected when she applied to Washington Lee, and it made him very unhappy, and me too. And of course, again, I started telling you about the CBT convention. I didn't finish that. I got up on the floor, one of six or eight people, and protested the fact that they wanted to go non-sectarian. I told you I've always been, you know, Sancho Pancho. I've always been spinning at windmills about things that look unimportant. I'm working on a couple of them right now. We don't have a placement bureau at Tri-County Tech, and it's a community college, and that's what they're there for, is to train people for jobs.
So I'm intrigued by these parties. You were the house manager?
Yeah.
So,
for 3 years.
So were you in charge of making sure things went smoothly at
the
party?
Sure. Well, no, that was the social manager. My job was the financial and the food. I had to pay the bills, make sure the mortgage payment went out, pay the house mother, pay the help, that kind of stuff. Buy the food or supervise the buying of the food, making sure that we had enough food when we had people in. We used to have assessments when we had the dances to pay for the extra food for the dates. Things like that. So my job was the budgets and accounting. And we did pretty well. We managed to pay the mortgage payment every month while I was here. But ZBT was a pretty cohesive group in my day. You know, again, when I was there, we had 24 brothers and 4 cars. When my son was there, they had 32 cars and 24 brothers. And that's the truth. Everybody had an automobile. We there were only 4 people with automobiles. One of my fraternity brothers, a man named Don Stein, whom I still see, he's retired, lives down in Florida. He's had a pretty tough life, I guess, personally. And I see him every time I go to Florida. I played golf with him once. My golf is no good anymore since I've got arthritis. But anyway, Don always had the latest, greatest thing in new cars. His folks had something called the Dutch Mill Candies in Chicago, which is like Fanny Farmer in this part of the world. And I'll tell you one of my other great adventures. While I was in the van, I had a date with a young lady. Her name was Louise Hannock, and she went to Sweetbriar. She was from, I don't know, whatever the fancy orange is in New Jersey, South Orange, East Orange. I lost which one. And she came as my date to one of the, maybe it was homecoming weekend. Of course, I was in the van, so I couldn't sit with her. And then, well, we always had a cocktail party at the fraternity house before the game, and she got absolutely smashed. I couldn't sit with her, and except at the half, after we got through marching, I'd go over and spend a few minutes with her, and I went back to the band. So when I got back to the fraternity house after the game was over, she was looped, and I figured the only thing to do was get her back to Sweetbriar, and I didn't have a car, so Don had a brand new Buick convertible, red wire wheels, red leather, it was ivory color, it was gorgeous. And the only thing I could do is to beg Don to see if he would let me, this is when we had the 4 cars, if he let me take her back to Sweetbriar in his car. So I took her back, but on the way back she got sick and threw up all over the car. And he never knew about that, and I spent about an hour cleaning that car up when I got back. And he never knew about it. I told him last year when I was down in Florida about the thing. He said, I never knew that the car got messed up. So, you know, there were a lot of little things like that you don't even think about, but that was real nice of him. The love of my life I met at Fancy Dress, 1940, I guess it was 41. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, all right. Well, she was just here with me last weekend. I went to Fancy Dress. I was something on the Fancy Dress committee. I think I did the publicity or something. And, you know, we had these very elaborate costumes. It was a Mardi Gras, some king, somebody's court, and we had these real, if you look in the calyx, you saw them in there. Benny Goodman played. It was really a big-time thing. And I didn't have a date, so one of my fraternity brothers who knew some people up in the Washington area was nice enough to get me a date from National Park College. And she was a young lady from Greensboro, North Carolina. Her name was Betty Changey, And I sort of knew Norma. She'd been there before on a couple of occasions. And that fancy dress used to cost us a lot of money. Used to cost $50 assessment. We had $25 assessment. You had the costumes cost us $12. We had to pay $6 a piece to rent the costumes. Now, this is 1939. Now, that would be like $500 today. Maybe more, maybe $1,000. Had to send them a corsage, which was $3. And then we had a couple other things. We had an assessment in the house for the extra food, and then the tickets. So it was a big deal. So anyway, she came with me. She looked lovely at the fancy dress ball. And the girls used to stay out in town at the boarding house type places. The ladies would take them in, and they had to be chaperoned. And I took her, and she changed clothes. And we went after the fancy dress ball. There was an intermission, and we'd go back to the dance for another 2 or 3 hours, and ended like 3 o'clock in the morning. So we went back to the house, and I left her down in the living room while I went upstairs to change out of my fancy dress into my tuxedo. And when I came back down, she's talking very earnestly to this guy over in the corner. And I said, "Betty, who's this?" She says, "This is my fiancé, Stuart something, whatever his name was, from the University of Virginia." And I said, "What the hell are you doing here with me?" She says, "Well, I knew that you had something important to do with fancy dress, and I felt you needed an attractive date, and I thought I could do that for you." I said, "That was real nice of you." And I went back to the dance, and somebody broke on me, and that was the last time I've ever seen her. So I went back to the fraternity house feeling pretty low. And while I was moping around there in our little activities and bar and whatever we had down in the basement, one of my fraternity brothers, Lewis Greentree, came up to me and said, "Fleisch," he says, "I need a favor." I said, "What is it, Spec?" He says, "I'm sick as a dog." He said, "I got the flu or something, and I've invited my cousin, who goes to Madison College, to come to fancy dress with me, and she's a real nice young lady. Would you see that she gets home all right?" Well, that was a young lady named Elna Pincus, and I fell madly in love with her. And I went to see her every weekend. That was my senior year, and I had unlimited cuts. I never went to, we had Saturday classes then. I never went to Saturday classes. I was always up there on Saturday. And she lived in Norfolk, and when I graduated, I went to work at Tallheimer's in Richmond. And I used to go down to Norfolk every weekend, and I asked her several times to marry me. And she and I were together in Harrisonburg that Sunday that Pearl Harbor happened. And of course, I took her back to school immediately and told her I had to go. I had applied for the Navy the summer before, but they told me I couldn't see well enough to be an enlisted man, much less an officer. And he said, "I'll file your stuff, but forget about it." So I knew they would need me. So I went back to Richmond that same afternoon. And eventually, when they called me, when I finally went on active duty in the Navy, I was stationed in Norfolk for the first couple of months, so they sent me up to Harvard for supply school. And I asked her to marry me. And I wasn't rich enough for her mother, I think, mainly. Mother didn't like me, I knew that. And so, she left me dangling. And when we were in Norfolk, we went to those beach clubs at Virginia Beach. I don't know if you ever heard of them or remember. I think they've all gone now, but there used to be these beach clubs where you went for dancing and dining. It was real nice. That's all they did. You had a big dance floor. And we were there one night, she and I and some other people that I knew from Norfolk, from the Navy. And there was a table about as big as this, and then there was a table like over there, and there was this Lieutenant J.G. sitting by himself. And I went over to him. I said, "What you doing here by yourself?" He said, "Oh, everybody's dancing. I don't have a date." I said, "Come on over and sit with us." And I introduced her to him. Okay? So anyway, I finished my tour of Norfolk. And I left then like in May, went to supply school, and left in September for the South Pacific. And when I got to my ship, it took 2 months for me to get to that destroyer I was assigned to, because nobody knew where it was, and I was assigned to other ships until I got there. I had three big gray, those old-timey gray mail sacks sitting in the corner of the wardroom waiting for me, and everybody thought I was real important. Here comes a ensign on board, all that mail. And my mother used to write me every day and sent me the Anderson newspaper, and Pinky used to write me every day, and then I got all of them and put them in order. Well, Pinky had them. She was there every day for about 2 weeks, and every other day, then every third day, then once a week. I had them all by the postmark. Then I got the Dear John letter. And she married the guy that I introduced her to. So that, you know, that was the end of the world for me. I was seasick and scared to death, and that, it almost the end of the world, sure enough. Anyway, I thought I recovered, and I'd really forgotten about it, and I got married to somebody I met on a blind date, who was a wave. And anyway, my father and I were on our way to New York one time, and something happened to the train in Washington. They used to change the trains from Southern Railroad used to change engines. They had to go on a Pennsylvania engine or something. And we're on the platform there, and here comes Pinky. I hadn't seen her in 20 years. And we had a nice conversation. That was probably in the early 60s, and I hadn't seen her since. Last year, when I was here for this end of World War II celebration, a person that I knew, I didn't remember, came up to me. She said, "Al Fleischman?" She says, "I'm Jane Pincus, Eleanor's cousin." I said, "Oh, I sort of remember you, Jane." She says, "Did you know that Sol died 3 years ago? Here's Pinky's phone number." So I called her up, and I've seen her a couple of times since. I think that's a W&L story, isn't it? I guess.
It sure is.
May make a movie out of it. What else you want me to tell you?
It's a great story.
It's true.
I love it.
And I had her back. She came back with me last weekend.
That's why you forgot to come see
that's
me.
Right. That's what happened. Well,
I wasn't at all surprised.
Well, that's life. Well, I didn't mean to be mean to you.
Oh, I know you didn't. Anybody? I knew you had other things on your mind.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you something really important we haven't talked about.
Tell me.
The honor system.
Okay. It was a wonderful thing when I was here. You could leave anything that you owned anywhere, and it would be returned to you. And of course, I've been like that all my life. I've had many occasions when things happen where it would be of value to me that I would tell somebody that they left it, or that they lost it, or look for them. And I still do that. And I think Washington had a lot to do with it. And there was no question. We didn't have any problem about that. And we had two or three people dismissed on the honor system, and of course it was hush hush. Nobody ever said anything about it. I wasn't on the executive committee because I knew a lot of people on there all the time. But I think it's a wonderful thing, and in my lifetime, I've thought a lot about the things that, especially this, when we were here last week, about Washington's canal stock. I think that's a wonderful thing. It still goes to value the W&L. And it's hard to relate those precepts or those principles or those activities like what Robert E. Lee meant. Like I told you, I saw real live Confederate veterans marching. And I was born in the South. And I lived in South Carolina. It was a very poor state. Not anymore, but it was. And I know that the textile people and the people that came there after, that gave jobs to people after the war between the states, were very important to the South. But they've really ripped a lot of folks off along the way. Maybe not deliberately, but they did. But it's people can't relate to something like Robert E. Lee. There's just no way you can relate to this guy that, you know, that had the world by the tail and decided to follow his principles and to go with the South, whom I'm sure he felt couldn't win, but because he thought that was the right thing to do. And I think that was inculcated in us a lot more than it is now. However, W&L has a certain kind of person even today, and you can see them. And they're close, and they may fight one another and disagree while they're here, but when they get out, they're very much the same kind of people. And I think the honor system had a lot to do with shaping it.
Last question for me. Anything more you want to say?
No, I've said too much already. 10 after 11. I could tell Helen Marie I'd pick her up at 11:30.
Tell me, during the co-education discussion, how did you feel on the issue?
What should I say? Lukewarm. I you know, it's not like this thing is just happening to VMI the Citadel. I think it's wrong. Having been on a small ship for a long time, it would have been very difficult had we had ladies on board. I didn't say females, I said ladies. It would have been extremely difficult. I think there's certain things in the military or in a life-threatening situation, and I think women are good at a lot of things, you know. We might as well, readjust the male physical being so that they can have babies. It'd be interesting. I mean, I think there's certain things that, for whatever reason it is, and it's not chauvinism by any means, that women can't do as well as men. There are a lot of things I know that I can't do as well as a woman. And I think that they've added a lot to WNL. I talked to Bill Buchanan, who was the head of your Department of Politics, and he's a close friend of mine today. Hopefully I'll see him today about this when it happened. And he told me about his classes, how much they spruced up the fellas, that they made them dress nicely and made them more interested in academics, that the girls are so smart that they make the fellas feel funny and they have to hit the books. I'm very proud of the females that I've met that went to Washington Lee, and I think they represent the type of person that Washington Lee should represent, that's all. What else you want me to say?
That's just fine. That'll do it.
Okay.
Well, I thank you, sir.
I'm really glad we got
to get together. You've got wonderful stories. I'm just tickled to have
you. I only got started on them. I don't know. I could probably tell you another hour's worth, but I better not.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, ma'am.